Hump Day live from the WGN studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. It's me, Anna D, Anna DeVlantis. Okay, I understand why the Nancy Pelosi moment, the ripping up the script moment, became the story of the State of the Union address, and whether you think it was utterly classless, a classless moment, or if you think that it was the only way she could respond to what she heard, given the differences and what she didn't like about that speech. There are some other things to talk about that I think that were completely overshadowed by that moment. Completely nonpartisan moments, by the way, from last night. Very moving, also. If you watched it, you may know what I mean. The only thing further we'll mention about Pelosi's move is just the last couple hours or so, she explained why she ripped up the speech. She had this to say. Here's what she said.
Why did you rip the speech up, Madam Speaker?
Because it was the courteous thing to do, considering the alternatives.
All right, that's what she said. I think that was last night. But then today she told Democrats, fellow Democrats, he shredded the truth, so I shredded the speech. And that's where she stands on that. I know you've been telling us what you think about it. And country's pretty divided about that, as we are about so many other things. Here's what we're not divided on. There was a very moving moment, a couple of them last night, a unifying moment, I think you could say. Just about everybody stood for it and applauded. And you can see why. The 100-year-old Tuskegee Airman, did you see this? Charles McGee saluting as the camera panned over to him, receiving the honors of the country, really, and the respect of all of us.
But sitting behind Ian tonight is his greatest hero of them all. Charles McGee was born in Cleveland, Ohio, one century ago. Charles is one of the last surviving Tuskegee Airmen, the first black fighter pilots, and he also happens to be Ian's great-grandfather.
Just before that, did you see the part where we saw the little boy, Ian? Let's hear just that piece of it. We probably should have done a reverse order. I'm sorry about that. But Ian was spotlighted first, and he was just this awesome kid. He just looked a little nervous, as any kid his age would have been at that moment, but just really cool to get the attention on him. Here's what they had to say about him.
In the gallery tonight, we have a young gentleman and what he wants so badly, 13 years old, Ian Lonfay. He's an eighth grader from Arizona. Ian, please stand up. Ian has always dreamed of going to space. He was the first in his class and among the youngest at an aviation academy. He aspires to go to the Air Force Academy, and then he has his eye on the Space Force. As Ian says, most people look up at space. I want to look down on the world.
I want to look down on the world. Big dreams for that little kid. And then, of course, his grandfather was the 100-year-old Tuskegee Airman sitting right there behind him. So it was pretty, just those were moving, moving moments. I think the one that I'm going to admit brought a tear to my eye. I was just talking to Walter Jacobson here. He was saying he got choked up over this. Many of you maybe did. Did you get a little emotional? Did you see it when the president introduced the wife of the soldier deployed to Afghanistan, talking about the sacrifices that families make when somebody, a loved one in their family, is deployed? And then we saw her, the wife and her two children there looking on, and people applauded for her. Then the surprise moment of the State of the Union.
I am thrilled to inform you that your husband is back from deployment. He is here with us tonight, and we couldn't keep him waiting any longer.
That brought tears to my eyes watching it. I don't know. Did you see it live, G, or Steve? Were you guys watching it?
I did. That reminds me of all of the viral videos when soldiers come home and surprise their families or their children by their arrival at a school function.
You see them all the time, right?
Oh,
Dad came home and surprises the kids, and it never gets old seeing them.
It makes me bawl. It just the fact that it's the sacrifices of the families too, not just our military, service women and men, but it's tough on the whole family. It's incredible.
It is. But that one I thought was just, that one really got me. And I felt like that was one we could all cheer for. And moving just to see the kids at first were like, what is that? What? they weren't moved at all at first. It wasn't like some of those videos you see where they come running to daddy. They were sort of looking around like, oh, okay. Like that was kind of just probably overwhelming for them to be in that moment. But super cool. Super cool moment. All right, a lot coming up on the show today. Snow is on the way. Demetrius Ivory from WGN-TV is going to check in with us. How much will you need to shovel? Who's getting the most snow? When's it coming in? All good questions. Plus, it's National Weather Person Appreciation Day.
Oh, it is?
I don't know. How do you show appreciation for a weather person?
Oh, get them a snow cone.
A shovel? I don't know. What do they appreciate? How do you appreciate them? Maybe just...
I think you don't ask them about the weather. They probably get asked about the weather every day.
What's the point of talking to Demetrius if not about the weather?
Well, he's a fun guy.
I just want to interrupt here a little bit. We're getting a little bit of news that, you know, senators are having their say ahead of this vote. And Mitt Romney just said that he will vote to remove President Trump from office, which, you know, he talked about witnesses and things like that, but he's the first Republican, likely the only Republican to say that he will do it, but he's on the floor of the Senate right now and just announced that he will vote to convict.
So that's interesting, but does it change the outcome of today?
It shouldn't at all, no, but it's just he's the first one to come out and say it, and frankly, I'm a little surprised. Even though he was talking about witnesses and stuff, I didn't know that he would actually vote to convict.
Well, and you know, obviously, Mitt Romney and the president have exchanged very harsh words for each other. They've been involved in one of those, you know, huge tete-a-tete major battles. He doesn't like him, but you're right.
But then he went back to interview for Secretary of State, mm-hmm. and, you know, so it has gone back and forth.
Well, that was sort of sucking up, wasn't it? he wrote an op-ed piece, which was damning against the president. So, interesting to hear that. Thanks for breaking in. Since we hearing from you, Steve, what's the status in Iowa? Do we have the Iowa caucus result yet?
No, I think they said there's some more votes coming out soon, but we don't have anything yet.
And so you think that it will be
I'm just looking at some of the headlines
soon?
I've seen. I would imagine some more this afternoon. I don't know what could be taking them this long.
Jeez, it just seems like an inordinate amount of time.
It is ridiculous.
Right?
Yeah.
If you think about it, normally you hear about it sort of like 10 o'clock that evening, and this is now going into 2 days later with no results. New Hampshire, isn't that tonight?
No, New Hampshire's next week.
Next
it's the 14th,
week. Okay,
I
they're
think.
Just in New Hampshire campaigning. That's the next one.
Right.
All right. Well, we'll wait to get that news. A lot going on in the news. Steve Bertrand has that news for you. Also coming up, we've talked about this on the show. There's been some of this in the news about CTA stops and some crimes happening on public transportation. Another one today. Sergeant Pete is here, our police and crime correspondent. Unpaid position. He will be here to talk about that. I know. Don't roll your eyes. We'll try to get parking for you. We also have about carjackings and ride sharing. There's some crimes on the news the last month or and a half about that.
I had my phone stolen on the red line.
When
so
was that?
Sad. It was a couple of years ago. It was awful because I didn't have it backed up to the cloud as I should have. It lost all these photos, hundreds of photos of people that, you know, weren't in my life anymore. It was really tragic.
Was it taken out of a purse? Did you leave it on the seat?
It was out of my purse. Mm-hmm. I thought it was secure. And
you had no idea it was gone?
No, because it was rush hour. So people are bumping up against you all the time.
Right. Well, Sergeant Pete's thoughts about that. And we will hear from him and much more. But Demetrius Ivory checks in next about the weather coming our way. Stay with us here on WGN. Anna DeVlantis here on WGN Skyline Studios. 118 is the time, and you're a few hours away from the snow that's coming our way. We want to get to that incoming system, find out when it's coming, where it's going. Winter weather advisory issued as well. Demetrius Ivory of WGN-TV fame, he's joining us now to talk about it. How you doing, Demetrius?
It's infamy today.
Yeah, people don't like you as much on days like today. Although, you know, you're helping us. You're helping us.
Yeah, and it's been a relatively mild, well, very mild winter. And, you know, snow really hasn't been so impactful. But I think that we've all just become softened. And it just any snow comes our way, we're like, uh-oh, here it comes.
Well, it seems like last year this time, what, were we just sort of getting over the polar vortex? Were we out of that yet? You know, it's just kind of that period of time where we can think back and feel pretty good about where we are right now.
I try that all the time on air, and it doesn't work. I say, like, remember last year it was minus 21? And people are like, no, what, is it going to snow today or not?
Right. So it's, you know, before we get to all this, that stuff, National Weather Person's Day, I saw Ben Bradley tweeting to you and
thanking you for your service or something like that.
Oh, come on, Ben.
Trying to figure out.
Open the wallet.
Right. What do you do for a weather person on a day like today?
I think you buy stuff for them. I mean, you know, you ask me, I think you buy them whatever you can, you know.
What's a good gift, Demetrius? What are you looking for if you had to sort of just kind of put it out there?
I couldn't
even
imagine.
In the ether to see what people would get for you.
I couldn't even imagine. For the people I work with, money, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can never go wrong with good old cash for people I work with.
You're probably loaning Ben Bradley money anyway, so he probably owes you some.
Probably.
Knowing
but, you know, for normal viewers, just a, hey, you know, it's, I think it's a cool, funny thing.
Why do they have this?
I have no idea. And it's interesting because it used to be Weatherman's Day, but they changed it to Weather Person's Day.
That makes sense.
You know, that makes sense. But it's still there was still never any explanation why my producer
printed out the weather.gov release on this. Many of us take weather information for granted. Turn on a light switch and you get light. Turn on your TV or radio, check a website, you get the weather forecast. Easy to forget that around the clock, dedicated meteorologists, forecasters are vigilantly working to produce this stuff for us to keep us safe. And days like today, we appreciate you, Demetrius. We really do.
And I think it was a famous or like an older meteorologist's birthday or something like that. The truth is, I think that this was because of Groundhog Day. I think that this was a way of just kind of saying, okay, it was kind of like, you know, kind of saying, hey, Groundhog Day, okay, you got all this pub. Here's Weather Person's Day right after that.
Everybody's got a day.
I guess so.
So now, I mean, you've had this day, and so appreciate your day. And, you know, hope they treat you like a king over there.
Like I said, Ben Bradley, open up the wallet.
Tell him. Well, I'll let him know, too. I'm going to text him when we get off the air here. Tell us about the snow, though. People do want to hear what's happening. Winter weather advisory. Where is that going to be? So that's like the worst of it?
Yeah, I'd say that's the worst of it. It's not the worst that we've seen. But the worst of it's going to be south of I-80. So that winter weather advisory goes into effect, let's see, in about 2 hours. And that is for areas generally south and east of Chicago. So Kankakee County, Lake LaPorte, Porter counties. It expires noon tomorrow. That's what we're going to see the heaviest of the snow. Some areas 4+ inches of snow I think is not going to be out of reason, especially late tonight into early tomorrow morning, and that's mainly south there. For Chicago, certainly not as much. I think tonight 1 to 3, and I think we could add another inch or so into tomorrow if we get a lake effect push. It could certainly give us an inch plus for tomorrow, but all in all, I got 2 to 4 for areas kind of north of I-80, and then south of I-80, the potential for a 4+.
And it's starting at around what time?
We already have snow in some of our southern and western counties. So, yeah, into Livingston County, yeah.
It's here.
LaSalle, those areas, they're already looking at a little bit of snow at this time. So it should be, I think, outside your office window, probably by the time the sun goes down. So it's moving a little bit quicker than models had shown. So I have the snow moving in probably after the 3 o'clock hour, downtown, that is.
So it will affect rush hour, it sounds. I thought it was later, more like 7 o'clock, but it sounds as if it's moving a little quicker.
That is what it looked like. Now, I don't think it's going to be heavy snow, but as you know, any snow affects our rush hour commute. So there is, I think it's going to affect us, but I don't think it's going to be in the case where roads are going to be hard to travel. It's just slow when it snows during rush hour. So get ready for that.
Yeah, prepare for that.
Yeah.
Might be a rough commute. Is it going to be that heavy kind of snow, Demetrius? So when we're shoveling it, is it the heavy stuff we got to watch out for?
Yeah, I think a lot of folks are going to get away with, you know, not shoveling it at all. You know, 2 inches, you know, maybe, I guess, you know.
Kind of brush that away.
Get the broom out. But it is going to be the heavier variety, kind of the 10 to 1 ratio. We don't have a very cold temperature out there. Temps are going to be stuck in the low 30s and upper 20s for the entire night. So that's right where you get close to that 10, 13 to 1 ratio area. So I do think that it's going to be kind of the, you know, a little bit heavier on the heavier side.
Okay. So be watching out for that. That's important to know.
Yeah.
You know, did you see this? So the Kansas City Chiefs, I don't know if you know, they won the Super Bowl. So they've got this big parade there today, and they're kind of getting ready to be snowed on.
Yeah.
The system is kind of is affecting them as well. It's sort of moving in, and they're hey, the parade's going on. It's huge celebrations.
Well,
there.
Imagine if it were us. We'd do the parade.
You know what's funny? I heard them saying, like, oh, it's been 50 years. It's been 50 years. You know, it has been 50 years for the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, it's been 35 years for us. It's
oh,
not
my.
Exactly.
Wow, that seems, yeah,
you know,
that's
put
true.
It, put it in context there. It's just, you know, we'd like to have it.
So you'd still go to the parade. You know, down I was surprised at in portions of Oklahoma, you know, they basically shut down the state. Numerous school closings there because of the snow. Mm. And, of course, in pockets there, they're certainly going to get more, you know, 6+ inches of snow in pockets there. But even the university, I think it's the University of Oklahoma shut down. So, you know, it was a big deal for Oklahoma. I think into Missouri, there's certainly going to be the potential. I mean, they're going to kind of get the worst of it because the way that this thing is following, the low is going to track south of us. Mm-hmm. So the difference between what we're seeing in this storm and I'd say like the last three that have come our way is that it's way more south. So in this case, you're not going to have that warm air that makes its way in and really bust the forecast where it's, you know, 1 inch of rain equals 10 inches of snow. Well, what if it's the 1 inch of rain? Then no snow. You know?
Right. That's where it gets tricky.
Yeah, that's where it gets tricky. Not this case. We're going to be north of that center of circulation, so it's all going to be snow for us.
Okay, then tell us just about the couple days ahead after the snow.
So after the snow, you know, the event snow exits the area tomorrow morning, there's going to be a push of some lake effect snow. Now, this could affect us tomorrow. You know, it all depends how strong the winds are coming in off the lake, because right now we are certainly looking at lake temperatures, which are sitting in the upper 30s, so the water's just warm enough where you blow some cold air over it, it's going to give you some snow. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have the potential for lake effect snow tomorrow. That could, that's why we're seeing tomorrow morning's rush hour commute certainly impacted. That's going to be a slow go. Maybe tomorrow afternoon along the lakeshore. So kind of be on the lookout for that. But then after that, Friday we dry out. And then into Saturday, maybe another little light snow shower comes our way as a little disturbance rumbles through. But nothing really significant. Temperatures kind of going back up into the mid-30s by Sunday and upper 30s by Monday and Tuesday with rain and snow next Tuesday. So that big cool down that everyone just expects to come,
yeah,
right now, not
it's
next
not
week,
on the
not here.
Horizon. No.
No.
And then it looks like it'll warm up enough this weekend to melt the snow. So
I think
that.
We'll melt some of it away. I mean, I think, you know, with highs in the mid 30s, you're not going to melt all of it away. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the stuff that's sitting out in the sun, especially if we get some sun on Sunday, a lot of that stuff is going to melt. If it's on pavement, if there's any salt anywhere near it, it's out of here.
All right. That helps us.
Yes.
Thank you, Demetrius.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you.
Always good.
WGN-TV's Demetrius Ivory of the TV Weather Department fame checking in with us. Thanks, Demetrius.
Thank you, Anna.
We've got more coming up here on WGN Radio, including Sergeant Pete with some cop talk coming up here. It's 1:32 here on WGN Radio. Anna DeVlantis here, along with Sergeant Pete Kokonis. Good to see you, Sergeant Pete.
Good afternoon.
Well, very formal. I like that. I like how you're very formal today. We heard a headline there, and I want to let people know what you said about that crime, because there's been a rise in some CTA and transportation-related crimes. Steve Bertrand just said, hey, there was an incident involving a man near UIC, and you said what?
Well, the guy was trying to exit the train. The guy grabbed him from behind, tried to take his backpack, and when the man resisted, this guy shot him in the back and then fled.
So he was resisting as the guy was trying to grab his backpack and
right.
steal
and he
it.
Pulled back to get away, and the offender shot him in the back.
Oh, gee, that is so sad. Very sad, but it's just that one detail that you think about. Gosh, it's like you always say as cops, just don't struggle. If somebody wants your stuff,
Give it to them.
Give it to them. You know, there are so many, the things I want to get to here are the crimes involving people in their cars. There's a number of them. We've had the rideshare crimes. We have had some carjackings. We've had some car thefts. And then the CTA-related crimes. And I know you looked at a lot of these. You took a look at the data and you took a look at the incidents that have happened in the last couple months to kind of see if there's some common themes, some common threads, and what you might be able to glean from that potentially could help us. You never know what happens when in a criminal's mind. I mean, why they're doing what they do. It is beyond me, beyond any of us, to understand why that ever seems like the right answer. But how we respond to it can be, there are some certain guidelines and there are some certain things you can tell us about. Let's talk about carjackings in particular, because you've said you've taken a look at this data and some people are doing, several of the people who've been victims of this have done the exact same thing.
Right.
40, making them a target.
Right. 40% of the car thefts nowadays, recently, have been people running into stores, leaving their cars running to get in a coffee or pick up a sandwich or pick up an order, and they leave their cars running. Boom, the car's gone.
Leaving the car running seems right. like a bad idea. You don't
Always.
Leave the keys in the car.
Right.
You don't leave it running. Even if it seems like no one's around or everything's fine and you want to keep it warm because it's cold outside, not a good idea.
Other people, and my wife is one of these, they leave all their baggages.
You're going to out Bridget on this one?
Yeah, I'm an outer. You too, but you leave all this stuff in the car.
Yeah.
And as they walk by, they see this. You know, they don't know if it's a gym bag or that it's got, you know, smelly stuff in there or whatever. They're going to break the window and take it. And the other thing that's amazing, I was just at a community meeting the other night. People leave the second key to their car, the fob, in the glove box. So when the guy breaks in the car, he steps on a brake, hits the start button, he's gone because you've left your key fob in the car.
So you've seen that they do try that kind of thing.
Yeah,
they know
yeah.
to try that
yeah.
sort of thing in case.
And you just have to, you know, they'll do that little bump where they'll bump your car and you'll get out and they'll jump in.
So describe that, because that is something in some certain carjackings we've seen in the city recently, that was what they chose to do?
Right. They drive up behind you, they bump your car, and it's not a serious bump, but it's a bump. And so you get out to see what the damage is, and somebody gets out of that car, runs around, jumps in your car, and the two cars drive away. So if you're a woman and you're alone, and especially if it's nighttime, and you get bumped, you get the license, drive away, go to a gas station, go to a police station, go to anywhere where it's well lit, and report what happened.
We've seen it with men as well. I mean, it isn't just women, for sure.
But men and women, you know, some people even resort to, they'll flatten your tire. They'll watch you go in and out of a store. And then they'll see that you're coming out with a lot of packages. Somebody will come up and stab your tire. So now you have a flat tire. They motion you. You got a flat tire. You walk around. They'll snatch everything you have.
You know, there was a series of incidents here, too, where people were carjacked while sitting in their cars while it was running as well.
At a light or something. If it's especially down here, these kids, when they steal a car, most of them, they're going to use it in another crime. Mm-hmm. And they're going to use it in a series of crimes. And what they do is they pass the car from one member of a gang to another, to another, to another. And that car's used four or five times. Now, if the police department is lucky, and as they were up north recently, they get a license plate number and they plug it into the iPods and eye cameras that they use that are on the street poles. And in real time, it will identify this plate and say where this plate is. So then the police can stop this car and take the people in. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times it's the different people that used it for a different robbery 2 or 3 days ago.
I see. Yeah. You know, it's fascinating to see the threads involved, because I think we can all learn from when you see kind of how the MO, when it's repeated over and over again, it's good to know that stuff. And that's the kind of stuff you look at. You're looking
right.
at.
If you're walking down the street and you've got your iPod on or you're looking at your iPhone, you don't notice that car that goes around, passes you up one or two times. And then all of a sudden they'll pull a half a block ahead of you. Two guys will get out and they'll walk towards you. And you're like a sheep surrounded by wolves. Mm-hmm. They're going to take whatever they want.
Yeah, it's good stuff to know. We had that situation, too. There's just charges now today for a man. He's heading to court today. He was robbing people he met through a dating app. So he basically
arranged on Grindr.
Yeah. And he would arrange a date with them. And
men.
Most with men. And they were all downtown here in the sort of Streeterville, River North area. In, it seemed like, fairly public places
right.
where you might feel safe to meet somebody. It didn't seem to me any of these places workplaces where you might expect to be very private or kind of secluded or scary and that kind of thing. I guess he tased them. And one of them was in a hotel room, though, I think.
But once you're in that hotel room and the door is shut, there's no cameras.
Oh, that's right.
You're at his mercy. Guns, knives, whatever he has, ties you up, takes whatever he wants, and leaves. And regarding this CTA stuff, the one thing that has become prevalent now with these the bad guys and girls is if you're sitting in the L, and as the train approaches a stop, these people, they'll walk up, and they'll see your phone in your hand, or they'll see your purse, and as the doors open, they snatch that purse, or they snatch that phone, and they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's before you can react. So when you feel the train is starting to come to a halt or slow down, that's when you should be the most vigilant, because that's when they're going to try to take whatever they're going to take.
Yeah,
and I mean, besides this guy getting shot, you had a guy playing the guitar. He got stabbed, and the case that I'd like to bring up is that there was a man yesterday. He went to jail for a strong arm robbery, beat a guy viciously, and left him under the Belmont L station. He gets a 5-year sentence, gets out in 2. He then turns around, gets pinched for selling cocaine. He gets out on bond. He does another robbery in front of Ann Sathers on Belmont, beats this guy, and they gave him an I bond again. And now he just got charged with stealing and beating up a 51-year-old woman. And he goes in front of a judge, Arthur, I'll tell you his first name, and the judge releases him on his own recognizance. Mm. This guy had 15 years worth of sentences, didn't do 3, and with this new system, bond system, he's out on jail to do it again.
It's a common complaint. We're hearing it more and more, even with weapons, people who caught with illegal weapons, firing them into crowds, going to court, coming back, doing the same thing, caught again and again. It feels as if there is something wrong with that system that does not allow those people to face more serious consequences.
Jails aren't that crowded.
No, I get it. Again, I understand the issues of trying to allow people chances to improve their lives and decide to turn things around, but at some point, there should be consequences for repeat offenders. That's what we're looking at, and it's front and center in the Cook County State's Attorney's race. I know it's a central issue in that. We don't have enough time to get to that, and that's politics, so let's stick to crime. We want to report that for a couple of months there, we were seeing several straight months of consecutive good news in terms of our numbers in violent crime, and great stuff to report in terms of improvements. We weren't, you know, you're never happy until it gets down to nothing, but we were getting to a point where we were really seeing several months of gains, really strong gains. And then January was not so good. It really wasn't. We saw the homicide rate jump by 50% from last year. 70%, I'm sorry. It was even more than that.
34 to 20.
70%.
Last year was 20.
Now, last year we had the polar vortex, so maybe
it doesn't matter. People... 20 people murdered. This year there's 34 people, homicide victims in January.
You've got a police department that's in flux. You have an interim chief. A new chief's going to be chosen at some point in the near future, right? We've got that process is rolling. We're moving in that direction. That's something they're going to be looking at. Is this a trend? Is this a month that doesn't feel like it fits in?
Well,
what's happening there?
If you look with the reorganization that they've done, is what they've done is they've opened up 2 areas that they never should have closed, you know, under McCarthy. So they opened up 2, they're staffing them. And now the district commanders are now going to be assigned detectives to their districts that are going to be under their supervision. The only detectives that are going to stay really unsupervised by the district commanders are the homicide detectives. They'll be dealt with by Denahan, the new chief of Dix or whatever.
Detectives.
And they'll control him. He'll control them. But the other Dix will be assigned to the different districts. So you're going to have an influx of gang policemen, narcotics policemen, all assigned to these districts. So you're going to be taking what used to be everybody at home and square and putting them out to the districts to put an influx of bodies in squad cars so it make it easier for the community to get involved and easier for the policemen to have the time to interact with the community.
Mm-hmm. It's important stuff. I wish we had time to get to more things. There are some new things going on with technology in the department. So we'll talk about it next week when you stop in the studio. Thank you, Pete.
You're welcome.
Sergeant Pete Kokonis, 38 years a Chicago cop. Always appreciate your advice and perspective on things. We've got more coming up here on WGN Radio. So here's a question for you. Do you think politicians in Illinois unfairly draw the lines around districts to favor certain parties or certain politicians? Yeah, I do. And I think that if you would had the chance to have a say about mapping or redistricting or drawing fair lines with an independent committee, would you be up for that? You do have a say. You do have a chance to do that. It's only a few months away. A lot of people don't even know about it, but we have our next guest who will explain what you can do and what's happening in Illinois. 146 here on WGN Radio. This is Anna DeVlantis, and we've been talking about redrawing the lines in the state of Illinois to make them fairer, not make them political, but get an independent sort of committee together to try to make it fairer. Fairer. We've talked about this for years and years and years, and there's an opportunity for you to get involved in it if you'd like. Coming up, I've said many times, we've heard this many times, it's often the case that you don't choose your politicians, they choose you. Isn't that right, Madeline Dubek?
That is absolutely right.
The Executive Director of Change Illinois. I should mention you're a nonpartisan, nonprofit group, and you generally push for ethics in the state of Illinois. That is a big job, Madeline. You have a big job ahead of you, and I just give you all the credit in the world for taking on that role and what you do.
Thanks, Anna.
Tell us what's coming up here. What is this deal?
Well, we have this thing going on once every decade. It's that time of year. We're going to have the census nationwide, and everyone needs to participate in that, because if we don't have a full and accurate count, then that data is the basis for what is used to draw our political maps. And the way it's done now, politicians in power go into a locked room in the back, close the door, keep everybody out, and they start picking their voters, as you said, which kind of rigs the whole system at its very foundation. You know, last week, Governor Pritzker gave his State of the State address, and he said corruption in Illinois is like a scourge that is infecting our bloodstream. I like to say that that scourge enters our bloodstream when politicians start picking their voters and drawing their maps.
And I heard you say that, which is why I've said, hey, we need to have Madeline on the show, because, you know, she's sort of getting to the root cause of this whole thing and reminding us about that. Speaking of the governor, when he ran for office, he was very much on board of supporting an independent commission to draw our legislative maps. He's on record. He's talked about it. Several editorial boards asked him about it. He said, yes, I like that idea. Does he now like that idea?
Well, we're hoping that he still likes that idea. He has said repeatedly, he also said it in a survey that Change Illinois conducted during the 2018 campaign, that he supports an independent redistricting commission. So we take him at his word, and we hope that he will step up and start pushing for it with the legislative leaders who want to hold on to that very important power that they have to pick voters and draw maps and protect their incumbents.
But if you think about it, Madeline, obviously they're self-interested in
absolutely
keeping the system the way it is. It benefits them the most. So it's sort of
they
like, why would I vote against this?
They can guarantee that they're reelected this
right
way.
We got the whole system figured out.
You know, the democracy is supposed to be for us, not for them. And we're supposed to have choices. And one of the results, you know, there are a lot of other states around the country that are gerrymandered to a much more extreme than Illinois is. But what happens when it's done in Illinois is that we lose competition. And so in 2018, half of the Illinois General Assembly seats were not contested, meaning there was only one candidate running. Because of the way the districts are drawn, people understand that they don't really have a shot at winning.
Say that again. How many were uncontested?
Almost 50%.
Almost 50% of the seats. You didn't have a choice as a voter about who you'd vote for.
There was only one name on the ballot. And then if you add in those races where there was some competition, but not much, in other words, the winner won by a landslide margin,
right,
that percentage jumps up to almost 80%.
Oh my gosh. There is something wrong with that system. And you're here to tell us that there is something we can do?
There is something we can all do about it. We have proposed for the past few years and will be reintroducing next week something called the Fair Maps Amendment. It would create an independent citizens redistricting commission There would be 17 people serving on the commission, chosen from congressional districts, so we make sure that we have the whole state covered. Seven of them could have Democratic voting records, seven would have Republican voting records, three would be independent voting, have independent voting records. They would be chosen by the two most senior justices of the Illinois Supreme Court. That commission would then get together and draw our Illinois General Assembly maps and our Illinois congressional maps. And everything would have to be done in public, transparently, with accountability. The public can give some feedback and talk about what communities they want to have kept together, and the commission needs to respond to that and address it.
Are there other states that are doing this well?
California did it after the 2010 census, and it was a grand experiment. Worked pretty well. They actually got the maps done. The public didn't like what they saw in the area around Los Angeles after the first draft. So the commission went back and adjusted some things and responded to that public input. And as a result, things worked out well. And they actually also saw an increase in the number of elected officials who happened to be people of color.
Mm-hmm. So your website, changeil.org,
yes,
has a countdown to the Fair Maps Amendment, kind of like when CNN says countdown to the town hall, Bernie's about to speak in 17 hours and 3 minutes. You have that for the Fair Maps Amendment.
Yep.
To tell people, we're running out of time here, people. We have till May 3rd, 2020 to get lawmakers to vote on this.
Right. So in Illinois, the law states that you have to have those questions for the ballot ironed out by 6 months prior to the election. So we have until May 3rd to get lawmakers themselves to vote to put this on our November 3rd ballot.
Mm. And anything else people can do?
We are actually having a rally in Springfield on March 26th. We'll be chartering buses and taking people down from the city and wherever else we can find groups of people to go. And we hope that anybody who's listening to my voice right now will go to our website, click on the purple Get Involved button, and you can find details about that and sign up.
ChangeIL.org.
ChangeIL.org.
Nonpartisan, nonprofit group fighting for ethics in the state of Illinois. And you have your work cut out for you, Madeline Dubeck. We're hearing a lot more about ethics this year than we have in years past. And I'm wondering if that has any connection to the fact that we have several indictments announced and the federal probe that might be one of the most far-ranging, wide-sweeping sort of federal probes that we've seen. And we've seen a number of them in our history. That this one seems to have a lot of people nervous about who might be connected to it, who isn't already named.
I think that we are just beginning to see the start of this investigation. It looks to be pretty expansive and sprawling, and we'll see how far it ends up reaching. The U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois has been pretty quiet about what exactly they're up to and what all is involved, but I think that that is absolutely what is spurring what the governor had to say last week in his State of the State address and the creation of an ethics commission, which is having its fourth meeting tomorrow in Springfield, talking about the legislative inspector general and the legislative ethics commission, which definitely needs some work.
Mm, I would say so. It could be that moment in time. Could it possibly be that moment in time with this kind of a federal probe underway, this many people under scrutiny, this many practices of the way business has always been done under scrutiny? You have Mayor Lori Lightfoot in the city government who's a reformer who's trying to change that sort of system.
Absolutely.
Of cronyism and who I got your back sort of, but I'm not really for the people sort of kind of measures that have been in place for a long time.
Yep.
And we've all seen it, and somehow it's all been allowed to just continue to prosper. Now it seems, am I right? Am I being too idealistic to think that this could be a moment in time where we will see real ethics reform?
You know, I think that based on what I've witnessed in Springfield over the last several months and decades as a lifelong Illinoisan, it's still going to be a real struggle to get this done. And more people need to get engaged and let their lawmakers know that they expect it to be done. I think a lot of us in Illinois have just been so fed up by the corruption for so long that we tend to want to give up. But I'm not giving up, and I hope everyone listening will not give up and let their expectations be known. If more of us do that, we actually can achieve change. You know, I like to say that we're better positioned now than we have been in decades, because we do have someone in Chicago City Hall on the fifth floor who absolutely believes in reform and has already pushed through several major changes. We have a governor who says he favors an independent redistricting commission. We have this ongoing corruption probe, and I think all of those things add up to giving us a shot to get something done here that needs to be done and should have been done a long time ago.
I couldn't agree with you more. Madeline Dubeck, she's changeillinois.org. She's the executive director. They have that rally March 26th. Sending the buses down to Springfield.
Yep.
You can get involved. Go to the website.
Please.
And that's what you need to do.
Changeil.org.
Changeil. Thank you, Madeline.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate your time. Good luck with the efforts. More to come here on WGN Radio, including it's the 2 at, well, we actually have 2 o'clock. We have the Wellness Wednesday, and the doctor is in the house, magnesium. He's going to talk about that. A lot of people using magnesium supplements for a number of different health issues. Do they work? Should you avoid them? Who's the best candidate for using them? That's on the list of things he'll talk about, in addition to the flu and the coronavirus. 207. Feels like a little dance party just started in here. Dr. Steve Salzman is here. The doctor is in the house. He's a trauma surgeon. He's a member of the SWAT team, certified badass. And he also, he just started a clinic, Screen Care Medical. It's a group of clinics here in the Chicago area where you treat people with chronic pain and chronic illnesses, right? You've taken all your medical background and you said, hey, I'm going to do this kind of thing.
Yeah, totally concentrated. It's an integrative medicine cannabis practice per se, but we do a lot of other things actually. Yeah,
so cannabis is part of it, but
yeah, I mean that,
look
that's
at everything
big...
going on. I know before, yes, you talked about, you look at underlying, is a person sleeping, are they depressed, do they have anxiety, that sometimes can be kind of affecting and impacting over the big disease that you're dealing with, or the big thing you're dealing with.
Right, yeah, that ugly triad of insomnia, anxiety, and depression, it's true, that's what we found, that every single patient that came in was suffering from one or more of those, and we sort of build from the bottom up. It's what you do. You fix the things that you need to fix first, which are sleep and getting patients to feel better, and sort of lifts the fog off their head. And from there, you can start to implement lifestyle change and really make a difference.
It makes a lot of sense. And I know you're working on some research as well. That'll take a while.
Quite a bit, yes.
But yeah, quite a bit of it on a number of a couple thousand patients now. And then you're going to try to release that. And so we're looking forward to hearing those results and see what you find, because a lot of people do deal with chronic pain and chronic illnesses. And we'll be, if there's anything helpful there, we'll let you know. But Dr. Steve is here for a couple other reasons. While the coronavirus is dominating the news and the headlines, and I understand why, we actually should be more concerned and turning our attention to the flu. Right, Dr. Steve?
100%. The coronavirus is getting an awful lot of attention, but just the flu alone in the United States this year, 19 million cases so far identified, 180,000 people have been hospitalized, and there's over 10,000 deaths, which of course are going to grow because the flu season could last all the way up towards May.
This is just this season.
Correct.
Flu season.
This is
so
the current data.
10,000 deaths in the U.S.?
Yes.
Okay, versus...
Yes, and the interesting thing about this flu virus, which is not getting a lot of press, is that it appears to be, there are three types, A, B, and C. And A is considered the more serious one. However, this year they're finding an increase in influenza B, which hasn't been seen since 1992 and 93, about 27 years ago. So even though this strain might not be so virulent, this strain is proving to be a little more virulent, I think, because it hasn't been around so long that children haven't been exposed to it. And so it's becoming, a lot of children becoming quite ill,
yeah,
as a result.
I've heard just the number of children impacted by the flu this particular season is on the rise from previous years. And I know anecdotally, a lot of kids in my children's school, we had a Super Bowl party, a couple of people didn't come because their kids had the flu. It definitely seems like it's here. It's very present in the Chicago area, particularly among children.
Yeah, no question. And it's very serious. This year alone, 68 pediatric deaths, and when they looked at them, 45 of them was from the B strain. So it's really quite interesting. This season alone, when they looked at the breakdown of things so far, under 4 years old, 58% of them had the B type flu, and of the ages 5 through 24, 72% of the cases were B. So as opposed to an adult, so I think it was 25 through 64 was 43% had B, and 65 and older, 23%. So while it might be an easier season per se for adults, for children could be potentially quite difficult.
Mm. How is the vaccine doing this year? We've had some time. You've had some time in the medical community to figure out how the flu vaccine, how effective it is. Where are we there?
They don't 100% know that, but they're around 60% accurate. Actually, according to what the experts are saying in the CDC, it's not bad this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad. But again, you know, still, even if they're 60%, you need to go ahead and get the vaccine, because just by getting the flu shot, it lessens the duration and the severity of illness, and it helps prevent the spread to others. So I guess something important to tell everybody is, A, that it isn't too late to get the flu shot, and if you haven't gotten the flu shot, to probably think about it.
There's still time.
Yes, yes. The flu season, even though it peaks between December and February, it could last all the way upwards towards May. So absolutely, it is not too late to get the flu shot.
Okay, well, that is good to know. And I know they're keeping track of all of that. Can we touch on the coronavirus for a moment here? We've gotten the word that they're working on a vaccine, speaking of vaccines, for the coronavirus. The World Health Organization, though, I think had an announcement today that they're not there yet. It is not there in terms of having the vaccine for the coronavirus.
Yes, I'm sure they're close. That's probably something leaked somewhere to get it out. But so far, there is no actual vaccine that's been made. But again, if we talk about the coronavirus and updating it, we just talked about the flu, but only 492 people have died worldwide of the coronavirus, and about 24,500 people affected across 25 countries or so. And then I think there was just a new case, by the way, in Wisconsin before I walked in here.
Oh.
But again, these are small amounts relative to the flu. And again, there's, unfortunately, the most important thing to talk about the coronavirus is things as to how patients can protect themselves, and also what things not to do, maybe, are two things. So perhaps just to get that out, how to protect yourself besides getting a flu shot is quarantine, and again, containment. So if you're sick, to stay home and make sure that you're afebrile for 24 hours prior to returning.
What was that word you said?
Febrile? Yeah, without fever.
Okay.
Sorry, I got
all right.
No doctor all
got
of a sudden.
Got it. I was like, translation, please.
No. That you should be without fever for 24 hours. Make sure to practice good hygiene, covering your mouth when you cough or sneeze. Don't share things. Washing your hands, not touching your face. These are things that people can do to potentially protect against it.
Don't be a hero and go to work when you're fighting off something that might be flu symptoms.
Right, because you'll potentially take out the entire workplace.
Here, somebody says, remind us the difference between the cold and the flu. If it's starting to come on, how do you know which one you might be getting, the more severe one, which is the flu?
Well, again, it's the same thing. They're both viruses, right? But it's funny because some of the cold is coronaviruses. With the common cold, sometimes is of the coronavirus variant.
Oh, gee. I didn't know that.
But that was just funny you mentioned that. But again, there's the only way you can know is they can test it. So they have an influenza test so that you positively are identified as flu. But again, I guess more importantly is containing yourself. And if you're sick and high fevers and not feeling well, call ahead to the physician first so that the appropriate precautions can be taken. And then again, once you get there into the hospital or home, it's supportive care. It's fluids. It's managing all the associated symptoms of feeling terrible. And then one other thing we should probably mention is these antivirals, these Tamiflus. They can potentially shorten the duration of the flu, maybe for a day or so. But again, you have to take that within 48 hours of being symptomatic. And even so, if it helps, it's minimal at best, to be perfectly honest.
847, question for the doctor. How come I never seem to get the flu, but my wife gets it like several times a year? He doesn't get it. There's some people more prone to get the flu than others.
Yeah, I wonder if they both got flu shots or not.
Oh, that could be the difference, the differentiator.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't know. Perhaps the answer in short is that he's got antibodies, apparently, that she doesn't. So she's being, unfortunately, affected by the flu more often.
Yeah, it is interesting. So he doesn't get it, and that's a good thing, even though they're in the same household. So
yeah. And again, it's interesting because that's a very good point, Anna. Let's talk about like coronavirus and its transmission, or at least what they know about it.
Yeah, that's good. Keep us up to date on that.
So we talked about the transmission being through respiratory droplets. They're microscopic droplets, usually from people coughing. It's most likely spread. But it's not so easy, per se, to catch it. You have to be in very close contact, they think, roughly about 6 feet within the person for at least 15 minutes of time.
Oh.
So it's, yes, of course, in places you can get it. Just one inoculation can potentially give you the virus, but it's harder than one would imagine to transmit. And also, talking about precautions and stuff, we spoke about masks. I remember.
You did.
That
you told
we had
us that
masks
not
last time.
Every mask is going to be effective right. against these viruses. That some of them are more permeable than others.
Right. And the funny part is that there's netless. They have these N95 masks, which 95% of the particles you're protected from. But there's problems with that. They're not suitable for children. If you have facial hair or they don't fit well, it's not a problem. It's not covering the eyes, so if somebody sneezes and coughs into your face, it's great. It's covering your mouth, but right through your eyes, and you're infected. So, again, it's being vigilant in terms of our hand washing and our own behavior, which is going to stop the spread and help most.
Okay, that helps. That kind of brings us up to date and reminder that the flu is more of an issue for us here than the coronavirus, even though I know that gets a lot of news as they try to quarantine cruise ships and do all these kinds of things. It's big news, but the flu is something we're really dealing with on a major level here in our area. We want to get to probiotics and magnesium. I know you've prepared some information from that. We basically looked at your questions over your Dr. Saltzman's visits to us, and we said, hey, a lot of people are asking about magnesium. They want to be set straight about what it can do, what it can't, and probiotics, big sellers. It's up every year in terms of how many people are deciding to use them. And are they helpful? We're going to talk about that. The doctor is in, Dr. Steve Saltzman. He'll also answer your questions ahead here on WGN Radio. Okay, the doctor is in the house, and we were talking about the flu and the coronavirus. We want to move on to talk about probiotics and magnesium. We kind of looked at some of your questions over the last few months, actually, when the doctor was here. And a number of people said, tell me about magnesium. I'm taking it. It seems to be making headlines. Well, it makes headlines for a lot of reasons in terms of what people have perceptions about what it does. I've heard magnesium helps with insomnia. I have a friend who swears by that. You're laughing. I want to hear about it. And migraines. And then there are a number of other things. Magnesium, Dr. Saltzman, what do we need to know?
Okay, I broke this down because I know a lot of people were interested about it. Magnesium is a mineral in our body, and it works in many processes, including the control of how muscles and nerves work. And there's many, many claims about magnesium's superpowers. Some of them helps with inflammation and wound healing, potentially helps with build new bone cells, and it may protect against bone loss or bone breaks or patients with osteoporosis. Helps the heart pump blood because it relaxes the walls of the blood vessels and helps keep the pressure down. It may help boost the HDL, which is your good cholesterol levels. It potentially has roles in energies, potentially with migraines and insulin working right. So there's a tremendous amount of potential benefit with magnesium. And interestingly enough, when you look at it, half of Americans actually don't get enough magnesium. Typically, it's found in older patients, in alcoholics, in type 2 diabetics, or patients with digestive issues. And it's important to get magnesium in because lack of it can lead to things like diabetes and hypertension and potentially migraines. And so magnesium, if you can have a balanced diet, one of the things we talk about at Green Care Medical, once you're feeling better and we start deep diving through your diet, a good balanced diet will take in enough magnesium. But the answer is, well, how much magnesium do you need? As I'm sure is what everybody's asking.
Right.
The answer is not as much as you'd imagine. For women, 310 milligrams a day, and if they're over 30, 320 milligrams, and then again, if they're pregnant, you want to add an extra 40 milligrams on top of that. And for men, it's less than 31 is 400 milligrams, and older, 420 milligrams a day. And
all right.
So it's not a tremendous amount.
Without doing a lot of math here, but it's basically almonds, spinach, cashews, peanuts. I'm looking at magnesium-rich foods.
Yep.
You've got black beans, cooked edamame beans, peanut butter, whole wheat bread, avocado, potato with skin. These are the kinds of things, low-fat yogurt, cooked brown rice, fortified breakfast cereals. They all have, everything I mentioned is more than 40 grams for a small one, small serving.
Right. Yes, an ounce of almonds and cashews, probably about close to 80 milligrams, I would say. And avocado, one cup of it's about 44 milligrams. So again, you don't need a lot. And if you could see, just eating all those good foods, most of them that you mentioned, people who are eating balanced diets are going to take in enough magnesium.
But I guess people are asking, we have a number of texts too saying, should they've heard about its sleep benefits, that if I'm not getting enough magnesium, or maybe you are, whatever, that people are taking the supplements for sleeping. My husband has trouble staying asleep at night, 630. He wakes up between 4 and 5:30 every morning, regardless of what time he went to sleep the night before.
I have a whole theory.
Let me ask you about their solution that they're wondering. I've heard that there's a certain type of magnesium that could help with that. Your thoughts?
I don't think there's any data to truly support that, if I'm being totally honest. And again, as long as your magnesium levels are normal, then your body's going to function as it would function. And the extra magnesium that you take, the kidneys are just going to flush it out. And you got to be careful with magnesium too, because too much of it can lead to cramps and nausea, like laxatives and antacids. When you use things like this, because of their magnesium content, this is what can cause these problems. So you got to be very careful when it comes to magnesium and how much you're taking in, because too much can sort of trigger a lot of problems. I would love to circle back one day to that woman's comment about 4 or 5 a.m.
When we have a number of comments asking very specific questions about magnesium, so maybe next time you're here, we revisit this, because we only have a minute or two left, and I do want to make sure we get to the probiotic question.
Yes, we could circle back.
People have questions about that, too. That was number two on the list when we just look through to see what people are asking about. Probiotics, you see them everywhere. What's your advice about those?
Okay, what are probiotics? They're live bacteria and yeasts that are good for you. They're intended to have these health benefits, referred to as good or helpful bacteria. Truth be told, I know we only have 2 minutes. My partner, George, absolutely goes...
At Green Care Medical.
Yes, George, Dr. Gavrilos. He goes crazy about it. He goes, all you need to do is eat some yogurt and everything will be fine. And he's sort of right, you know. In the end, again, there are certain...
Because there's the same kind of elements to yogurt.
So in the yogurt, it's a lactobacillus. So you could get that probiotic is within the yogurt. So again, if you have an infection and you're taking antibiotics and you finish up, somebody like that who depleted themselves... or had bacteria killed as a function of taking it, then to sort of replenish. The whole theory is just a theory. It's sort of that they want to talk about using good bacteria in the body so that it helps it balance. It's sort of like there's not too much good bacteria and there's not too much bad bacteria, and so it sort of keeps you in this balanced state. But truth be told, again, sauerkraut or some other fermented foods, these are all things that would cover taking probiotics.
And kind of has the same sort of effect in food.
Correct. Yes, correct. Again, this, just like magnesium, I'll say the same thing. If you have a good diet and maybe a good, say, multivitamin, I think that's what most people who are healthy here in town need to do. And all of these other things, I think all they have is nothing more than expensive urine when it potentially comes to the magnesium. And with the probiotics, have some yogurt.
All right, very quickly, my producer's telling me only have a few seconds here, but is there danger in probiotics or magnesium? Can you, if you do take those supplements, you got to ask your doctor about?
Yeah, of course. Everyone's got to always consult with their physician. Magnesium, you can get cramping and nausea, so you got to be careful on taking it. For probiotics, no, not really. And all the other claims it has about skin stuff, preventing colds, allergies, urinary and vaginal health and oral health, these are all these other probiotic claims, many, if not most of them, unsubstantiated.
Okay, good to know. Dr. Steve, we'll see you soon here on Wellness Wednesday. Always appreciate your time and your advice. Green Care Medical is his group of clinics. It's Dr. Steve Saltzman, and your clinics are where again? They're in all over. You look at your
Palos, Hinsdale.
You can't even keep track
Homewood,
of them anymore.
There's Western and Ogden, okay. Justice, and the one near right near Midway Airport.
Just go
on
to
Archer.
Green Care Medical.
GreenCareMedical.com.
Yeah, that's where you go. Okay, thanks, Dr. Steve. We'll be back in a moment with more here on WGN Radio. Anna DeVlantis here on WGN Radio. 2:33 coming up on here in Chicago. And I'm just so excited because I'm dying to see this HBO docuseries. It's 6 parts. It already started. I missed it on Monday, but I'm going to catch up. Called McMillions, based on a huge scam perpetrated on McDonald's popular Monopoly promotion. We all remember the Monopoly promotion. This telling of the story is just incredible. And the directors here, James Lee Hernandez, Brian
Lizarte. Thanks, guys, for being here.
No, thanks for having us.
Okay,
yeah, thank you.
So this is something that might escape a lot of people. We might not remember this, even though otherwise it'd be a huge story, because when it broke, it was right around 9/11, and obviously our attentions were turned to other matters in our country, and we can understand that. But you, how did this hit your radar? How did you first decide to get attached to this project?
This started in 2012. I was laying in bed reading Reddit, just cruising through it before I fall asleep, and saw a TIL. Today I learned nobody really won the McDonald's Monopoly game.
Nobody won.
Nobody. And so I was shocked. Like, as a kid, I was absolutely obsessed with that
game. I remember
game.
That too.
And my first job when I turned 16 was at McDonald's during the time of the game. Looked into it and really couldn't find anything about it. I mean, very, very few things. And so I kept looking into it over the next year or so. Put a Freedom of Information request in with the U.S. government. That took about 3 years to go through, and then was able to reach out to the FBI agents and federal prosecutor that worked the case. As soon as that happened, I was like, you know what? This seems like something big. Called up my friend Brian here, who's had a great history in documentary filmmaking, and said, hey, let's talk about this. I think it's something we could work on.
So it really didn't make news.
No, it didn't. It did at the time, way back in 2001, for about a week, but the first wave of arrest, the indictments and the arraignments happened really up until September 10th.
So what can you tell us without giving too much away, because we want everyone to go to HBO and see the six-part docu-series, McMillions, but what can you tell us about, so who orchestrated this whole scam?
Well, the story is really about how the game piece was being stolen year after year, game after game. And
the winning game piece?
All the high-value prizes. So really, as far back as 1989 to 2001, anything $25,000 or above was being claimed by this criminal ring.
So like the Boardwalk and the Park Place and the ones we were all trying to get, there was always one you didn't have, right? Because you had kind of done your whatever it was. You were always looking for that one piece. And this guy had it?
Yeah, that was so you would be able to get, okay, let's say you need Boardwalk and Park Place to win $1 million. You could get Park Place all day long. It was Boardwalk it was missing. And what was happening was the marketing company that ran this for McDonald's, that's where the flaw was. And there was a very opportunistic person that realized there was this flaw, and they could get the game pieces and start selling them off to people.
How do they get it?
That is something that we reveal in the show, something that the FBI did not realize till later on. But you'll see within the show that the company who printed the tickets and the marketing company, when the FBI looked into it, it was like Fort Knox. They're like, there's no way this is happening here. And this guy just figured out a way.
So you knew this was something after you did this Freedom of Information request and you took 3 years and this is like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine what that was like. But then you started to learn more. Were you spending some time in Chicago with the headquarters here as part of the filming of this docuseries?
Yeah, we were actually very lucky in that McDonald's actually participated in the documentary.
Great.
So we got to come out here, film at their headquarters. Two of the people that actually helped the FBI, one of them who actually went undercover with the FBI at the time as a civilian, still work at McDonald's, so obviously probably a good company to work for.
Mm-hmm.
And they allowed us to interview them and talk about their experience with it. And they also helped us out with getting a lot of other things, a lot of information about this entire thing. And we also got to eat at the McDonald's headquarters.
Did you do the touchscreen thing where
did,
you have to order
yeah,
that way?
Yeah.
And the off-menu things, they have special things available around the world and only there.
We had a chicken sandwich from China. It was amazing.
Isn't it great?
It's amazing.
Like, they have some kind of, there's like a black bean burger. I don't know. There's something, another thing from Japan or something that's so good. Okay, so I think many people, just about most people listening who've ever gone to McDonald's, which is almost everybody, you remember these little pieces and you remember this game. And I don't remember anyone winning. Maybe this is part of the reason why. But the smaller prizes were given away. Is that right? Or did those even get divvied up in a
scam? No, a lot of people won fries and drinks and anything that was a low level, probably a Sega Genesis, which was a prize that both James and I both wanted.
Wanted it so bad.
100%, but we never got. In talking about, you know, one of the things that makes this story so interesting is that the FBI did this incredible undercover operation. A tip came in to the FBI. That's how the whole thing fell apart. And it was one rookie agent who really spearheaded this undercover operation where they pitched this idea of going undercover as a TV production crew to the winners, like the Publisher's Clearinghouse style, where they'll go with the big check to film the winners telling the story of how they won the piece and then what they did with the money so that they could go seize whatever they had. And it, you know, it's something straight out of a movie. It's stranger than fiction. Hard to believe that they actually went through with this, but they did. And the cast of characters that tell the story are incredibly colorful and vibrant. So it was fun to work on. We're excited to see it out there. You know, the first episode that just dropped yesterday. A lot of people have been just blowing up our phones, telling us.
What were they saying?
I mean, they're just, one is that everyone's laughing because it's not what you expect with a true crime series. There is a great deal of levity to this story.
Yeah, usually a true crime documentary.
Yeah, it doesn't end well for somebody.
Depressing. Someone gets arrested. Someone was wrongfully accused and imprisoned for 30
years. There are serial murderers, and that's what we deal with.
We had the ability to have that levity because that didn't really happen. And it's a crime, but it's not like they're robbing banks or holding people at gunpoint. It's a little different when you're stealing game pieces as opposed to actual money.
Did you talk to a number of people who were, you know, part of this, who felt, you know, they were involved, they were trying to collect pieces at the time? I'm sure you did.
Oh, yeah. So the first episode is really only from the FBI's point of view, because we just found it fascinating how the FBI actually works and how they investigate. It's far more of a process than, like, in a movie where they just make one phone call and they know everything. But the rest of the series is now from both sides. So we have the FBI point of view and then the quote-unquote winner's point of view. The criminals who are involved in the case, we talk to them and see their story and really see the history of how this worked, as well as, you know, McDonald's, the people who worked at the marketing company. We really try to encompass every single aspect of the story.
630, I won $60 in the game. The check they sent me looked like Monopoly money. The people at the bank didn't think it was real. So I guess people were issued these kinds of checks that had the Monopoly logo on it or something. The whole thing, it's ridiculous. And it's ridiculous how somebody could get away with this, at least for, would have gotten away had it not been for the tipster.
Yeah.
An insider, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. For the 6 hours that we are telling the story as it comes out each Monday, we found ourselves struggling to fit all the stories that we have learned into the 6 hours. So we're actually doing a companion podcast to the series as well, to talk about some of these great nuggets. Our deleted scenes are played there. We have guests who we're bringing on who were subjects within the series and answering questions from the viewers as well.
How did you decide six parts?
It originally starts as we're thinking, oh, this is going to be a great 90-minute to two-hour movie.
Okay.
And as we learned more and more, we got so much evidence from the FBI and the U.S. government. And then as we started talking to the people involved, you then just start to break the story out like, okay, well, we're going to need to tell this in maybe like three or four episodes. And then after we had talked to everyone, then we break the story down like, okay, it's going to be hard to condense this into six, but you really need to understand all these facets to know how it got taken down and why.
Mm, that's so the rookie FBI agent, does he participate? The one who was the rookie?
He's
a big part of it.
He's a big part of it. Doug Matthews is, if not already, he's famous. Like, people have been going crazy. People I haven't talked to in like 20 years are calling me like, who is this Doug guy? He's amazing.
How can I have lunch with him?
Yeah, he's an active FBI agent. Like, can we grab beers?
He's that kind of a character.
Oh, yeah.
Is he still here in the Chicago area?
He's actually now, he's in Greenville, South Carolina.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But he was actively involved in starting this investigation. How long did it take? Can you tell us that to solve the McMillions scandal?
One of the things that McDonald's was doing at the time that the FBI got this tip was they were getting ready to run another game. And so the FBI asked McDonald's, could you run this other game so we could catch the person or the people who are behind this in the act?
Oh, wow.
It was a huge ask. And, you know, McDonald's obviously knew that by participating, by agreeing to do this, could have great ramifications and backlash. And they did it. They found who was involved, and there was a huge trial.
I'm fascinated by it, and I know a lot of people will be too. You got to check it out. It's a six-part HBO docuseries called McMillions.
James Lee Hernandez, Brian Lazarte are the directors, and the podcast can be found, where do you go for that?
Literally anywhere that podcasts are available. So Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the HBO Now and Go apps, or basically anywhere that you can download a podcast.
And it's called McMillions, also your podcast.
Yeah, it's the McMillions podcast.
All right, easy to find. Thanks, guys. Thanks, James. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
For sharing the story. We're excited to check that out. More to come here on WGN Radio, including trending topics here at 2:43. It is time for trending topics, and Lauren Lapka has stepped into the studio for that. How about those guys with the McMillions docuseries on HBO? I'm really
so
fascinated by
interesting.
That.
Interesting. Honestly, I don't know this for sure, but I think about that with the grocery version of it, too, because I'm telling you, they just keep certain pieces out, or someone else is stealing them, because I've never won anything, no matter how many little pieces I've gotten.
And that's the reason. That's got to be it. We had 219 Hamburglar. Did we check out him?
Mm-hmm.
Is he the one who did it? Because you saw how cryptic they were. They don't want to give away the whole thing, so they wouldn't tell us exactly how it all ended, but the whole unraveling of it and the fact that they stuck with it for that long is so interesting.
I'm very curious to see it because how do you get away with that? How do you know where to steal the pieces?
And there is a really, it's really fascinating who was involved and then what he did with the winning pieces, because the guy who did it didn't exactly keep them all for himself.
Right.
He was handing them out to people at various places. So watch it on HBO. McMillions is what it's called. Steve Bertrand also in the studio now as we talk trending topics, guys. Anthony Rizzo. So yesterday, what a generous guy, right? What a generous guy.
Yeah, nice guy.
Yesterday, the news was that, you know, they renamed his baseball high school field after him. So he had donated $150,000 to get the light on the field, and they renamed it. And now he's giving $1 million to the Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital.
Wow.
We know he's made a lot of donations to Lurie's as well. So generous guy. That's really cool.
Yeah, he went to Parkland High School, right? That he gave them a lot of money after the shooting. Yeah.
That's right. In 2018, he basically went back there, gave an emotional speech, gave them some money to help, and had a candlelight vigil and participated in that. So we're going to trade him too? That's not being said. Don't say that. Please don't say that. So the All-Star game is here in Chicago for the NBA, Sunday, February 16th, next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're not there yet. And it's the third time it's been played here in Chicago. So they're getting ready. They're starting to hoist all the banners outside the United Center now. Pretty cool to have this here. Pretty cool.
Going to be a lot of famous people in the area.
Yes. Think about that. Think about that.
A lot of traffic, too.
Do you have tickets, Anna?
I do not.
I don't know. You want some?
No. Well, you got some?
No, I don't have any.
Lauren, you got some?
Nah.
No. No, I would like to have some. I would like to go to that. I think it'd be fun. Sports Illustrated is going to do a 100-page special edition for Kobe Bryant, so you can watch for that. Yesterday, we were talking about how Jay-Z and Beyonce, people were wondering why they sat during the national anthem at the Super Bowl. He cleared it up because TMZ originally posted the video showing them and Blue Ivy sitting there while Demi Lovato performed and the whole thing. He says it wasn't premeditated, it wasn't intentional, anything like that. It was instead a case of them doing their job because his Roc Nation Corporation has a partnership with the NFL and that they produced the Super Bowl halftime and they were working. So they were kind of looking through things and wondering, they're in artist mode, they said. Did our mic start? Was it too low? Are we doing everything? Where are the speakers? They were just sort of working through traps in their heads, so they weren't paying attention, I think is what he's saying. That's what he says. Field of Dreams in Iowa. You know, this summer, the White Sox play the Yankees in August. That is going to be awesome. So the preparations are underway there.
They won't know the score in Iowa, though, for 3 days.
These wacky things happen there. And this is kind of wacky because tonight in the area there around the town that's going to host it, they're hosting a meeting, how to be an Airbnb person. So you can rent out a room because there are no hotel rooms. They're already booked within an hour.
It's Dyersville, right?
Dyersville, Iowa. Right. Yeah. So within an hour around, all the hotel rooms are booked. And so they say, well, let's host a meeting. And not a lot of people in this area really get a lot of requests for Airbnb. And not a lot of people have done it. So we're going to get them all together. Teach people good ways to be an Airbnb.
That's actually really smart.
It is. It brings more people there, and you get to stay with the Dyersville family.
Or rent like 15 campers.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
And just park them.
Big RV park.
Find a place to pull one up. Ask somebody if you can pay them to pull it up on their property, maybe. There's some big land.
No, I'm just saying if you got property, rent them too, and then rent them out.
Yes.
Well, I think they've also, somewhere else, have done temporary RV parks for big events so that you can house some.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, if they've sold out.
You know, those things are zoning issues, right? So you need to find the right ground right. of land that you can temporarily transform.
Yeah. So it's not until August, but that's what they're doing to solve the, you know, issues with the, the whole, a lot of people want to go check that out. Are you going to go to that, Lauren?
I would love to. I don't.
Maybe you'll get to cover it.
I don't know how we'll get tickets. It's going to be very hard to get.
Yes.
It's going to be very small, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's not the actual field that's in adjacent
field.
No,
yeah, they're making a whole field for it.
8,000-seat ballpark for the game.
It's kind of weird.
August 13th.
That they're building a field to play near the field. Right? I mean,
yeah.
That they're going out there for.
Still, there's a magic to it. I mean, there really is. And then just seeing the game. That'll be fun.
It'll be the great copter shot above with the traffic to match the movie. Wouldn't that be pretty cool?
Oh, I'm sure they have a lot of plans to try and do something.
Remember the lights? Right? Scene by scene. Yeah.
To bring back those emotions from that movie. Oh, I bet they will. I'm sure
Kevin Costner will come through the cornfields.
I was going to say they should have like field corn planted in left field.
Yeah. They're prepared there, or they're preparing in Iowa. So that's what's going on there. The Illinois Restaurant Association is saying, hey, let's crack down on all these food delivery organizations, these groups like Uber, DoorDash, Grubhub, and Postmates. They're saying that, you know, a lot of times they charge the restaurant 30% of the food order. And they just want to say, hey, if you're going to be cracking down on us and our delivery trucks for cleanliness and all this other stuff, let's go and, you know, regulate them and what they're doing as well. And they're looking to pass an ordinance. They're trying to get the city council to do something about it.
I do think there are too many now. I can't believe how many there are. I thought there was just Grubhub forever.
I have never used Grubhub.
Oh, you're missing
out. Chicago company, publicly traded.
Well, I don't dislike them. I just have never used it.
It's convenient because, you know, a lot of places that you like to eat from that don't normally deliver or...
Right.
Maybe don't do pickup, or it takes a while to get pickup, or you just don't want to drive. They will bring the food to you because other people just agree to do it.
So you don't, you just go pick it up, Steve?
Well, I guess we don't order out much, but if we do, it's pizza, you know, or something like that.
Which you should continue to do because it's cheaper.
Yeah. So they also have issue with the 30% of the food order thing too. So that's an issue. P.F. Chang's is opening its first to-go location in Chicago in related news. So you can get the to-go. You pick it up. You got to do the work on this one. But that's on Hubbard Street, 213 West Hubbard Street. They're opening up a new P.F. Chang's. Wendy's is going to offer breakfast starting in March. They're getting into the breakfast morning wars.
Didn't they do that before? I feel like they did it. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah, they said. They said 6 months ago they talked about wanting to get into it. Maybe that's what you saw.
Maybe.
And then now they're going to serve up some new things, including the breakfast Baconator and the Frosty Chino.
Frosty Chino.
Oh, so it's kind of like a Frappuccino.
Yeah, but a frosty based Chino
for breakfast. Mm.
So you can get that. There's some stuff to check out there. Coors Light wants to help you adopt a dog. The beer company announced it's offering $100 to help cover dog adoption fees. First 1,000 people who adopt a dog between now and February 21st. You got to be legal drinking age. Once you adopt the dog, you can submit a receipt to the company via text message.
Huh.
So you can do that. They're getting into that, the Coors Light people.
I feel like that's going to go really quick.
Yeah, don't you think? Mm-hmm. That's 1,000 people. Coors Light, I think that's, you got to get in really quickly. Did you hear about this? The guy who walked into the Joliet Walmart with the sign, caution, I have the coronavirus. What are people thinking?
They're just wacky teenagers.
You think it was a dare or something? They were in their 20s.
Okay, so they're
still
mentally
maybe
teenagers.
Drunk already from the Super Bowl, you know, pregame parties.
Yeah.
Step back and think about that. So were people scared or something? If someone, no one's going to put a sign on themselves that says I have the coronavirus if they're serious.
Right.
So right.
It's someone trying to be funny, not realizing how much damage they actually can cause and did cause.
Well, that's right, because they sprayed everything with Lysol. They thought it was funny. Walmart says the loss of produce was over $7,000, $7,300. And the cleaning costs was $2,400. So then it starts to get serious. They found the guys, I guess. So they've got them.
Yeah, it was a video.
You know what they should do? They should give them coronavirus.
Oh, you think that's the right punishment?
An eye for an eye.
We've got a couple samples in town.
Now you can wear the sign, and it's really true.
Right.
Now you need the Lysol. Yeah, I think they're going to be facing some sort of consequences, and they won't be so happy and laughing about what they did. Finally here, Lake Michigan water levels break monthly record high for the first time in more than 30 years. We've seen the eroding beaches and that kind of thing. Now this news that a new monthly high has been recorded, first one in 30 years. 4 inches above the previous high.
But we're still, 9 inches below the all-time high, I think?
Yes. October 1986 was the all-time high.
9 inches below that.
So for all the talk about the Chicago and the erosion and everything, we're still at a lower level than we were a few years ago.
But I feel like the beach erosion in this area all the way to Michiana, that's where you're really seeing it. They're closing beaches and things like that.
And it has to do with the waves, too, I think, yeah. You know, the stronger winds. Although someone said, too, that there's actually they're creating beaches on the south end because of all the silt and stuff that's being drifting in with the pounding waves. I don't know.
Yeah, but we're certainly seeing some of the rough parts of that whole trend. But that's going to do it for trending topics. So that wraps up that. We're going to check in with Rokan, see what's coming up on his show at 3 p.m. coming up here on WGN Radio. Oh, and then the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.